Blog Talk Radio.
Is your business protected against the threat of malicious litigation and frivolous lawsuits? Are you sinking company profits into marketing campaigns that do nothing to contribute to the growth of your business? Bottled Business Sense provides practical business perspectives that uniquely emphasize both legal and media marketing strategies to protect and ensure the longevity of your business. And whether you're trying to provide a startup business with some level of stability, or an established business with foolproof asset and estate protection, or simply attempting to get a better return for your business marketing dollars, Bill Bernard and Rick Muscoso will expose potential pitfalls to ensure the security and growth of your business, free from unwanted expense and the threat of litigation. You'll learn how to implement marketing and protection tools equal to those used by today's most successful corporations. Let's join Bill and Rick for today's Bottled Business Sense Show.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Tuesday at 10 a.m. here on the Bottled Business Sense Show. Wanted to welcome all our viewers and listeners out there and wish you all a happy new year. We hope you had a great holiday over the last several weeks. I know Bill and I both enjoyed ours and our time off with family. And I hope you guys did the same. But here we are again in the new year. We're ready to kick off a new season of the Bottled Business Sense Show.
Another year coming down the pike, man.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, for those of you who are first-time listeners here, we are a simulcast show broadcasting tips and tricks and best practices from a legal perspective and how to protect and preserve your business, and from a marketing standpoint. That's the expertise and knowledge base that I share. So Bill and I, you know, love talking about the topics that we're experts in and sharing that for free to our user base out there. Should you need to, you know, dive in a little bit deeper, we're always available for you. And our contact information is below. Reach out to us on social media as well, on Facebook, Google+, or on Gmail at bottledbusinesssenseshow@gmail.com. Here's your feedback and potential episodes for the coming year. So reach out to us. We welcome your feedback, and we look forward to hearing from you. So with that being said, well, let's dive right into the show this morning. I want to welcome Bill on to the show.
Yes.
And Happy New Year, Bill.
Good morning. Happy New Year to you, Rick, and Happy New Year to everybody out there. You know, one of the things I should add to Rick's introduction is remember that from both of our perspectives, especially mine, you need to make sure you consult with somebody to make sure that the tips we give you, which are general in nature for the most part, apply to your situation, number one, and number two, how they would specifically apply to any situation that you have going on in your business. That's very important. You'll see a disclaimer at the end of the show from the legal standpoint of things. We are not your specific clients unless you choose to ask us to be retained. So we try to give you the generalities that would, you know, be the background or the foundation for anything you try to do in your business from a protection or from a marketing standpoint. So having said that, as you know, from my perspective as a business attorney, I deal with three levels of what I call business interaction, and that is employment law, estate planning, and asset protection. Asset protection essentially being the formation of business entities. Today, as we start the new year, I wanted to pick up on one of the issues that was brought to bear in the last campaign. And that is the prescription drug use in this country. We know that it's made national news in the last several years, and opioid abuse and heroin epidemics claim the lives of course, you know, many thousands of people every year and cause tragedy for American families and so forth. So I thought it would be appropriate to talk a little bit about the prescription drug use issue and how that interacts with an employment related situation, because not all prescription drug use is drug abuse. And that's something employers especially need to keep in mind, both at the job application stage and subsequent employee is actually on the job. So two recent lawsuits, Rick, have been brought to bear on this issue. And they were brought by the federal agency, the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission, or I should say the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is more appropriately phrased, better known as the EEOC. And this is a federal agency that looks into employment-related discrimination issues, one of them being the Americans with Disabilities Act, also known as the ADA. And how we're going to approach this today is how a prescription drug use issue might involve an ADA claim by an employee and how that might affect an employer should a lawsuit be brought. And before we get into this, I should also mention the EEOC can bring their own lawsuits against employers. So you can have an employee who files an EEOC claim and then brings a lawsuit against the employer, but you can also have the EEOC itself as a federal agency bring a lawsuit against an employer because the ADA is a federal law and it applies to all 50 states. So any employer could be sued by the EEOC no matter where that employer is located. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And two recent lawsuits, as I said, have been brought to bear, and I think they're interesting. And I'll give everybody out there a little bit of the factual background of each. The first lawsuit was brought by the EEOC, as I said, and alleges disability discrimination in violation of the ADA, Americans with Disability Act, because it talked about the interactive process that is required between a job applicant. This was a job applicant now, and providing reasonable accommodations to particular job applicants who are taking prescription drugs. Because you could have a drug test, which is a whole nother show that we have already done. You can check in our library on that. You can have a drug test as part of an employer's policy, as long as it's applied equally to all employees. And if you take that drug test at your job application stage or even thereafter, and you fail that drugs test, you may fail it due to valid prescription drug use, a painkiller, for example. So the job applicant in this particular case, and this happened in September 2016, so it's relatively recent, suffered from a back and neck impairment, and it limited her ability to perform certain tasks such as lifting and bending. So after receiving the positive test result, and this was, by the way, in a casino situation, after receiving the positive test result, the casino withdrew their job offer, and the EEOC alleged that when the applicant tried to explain to the casino that the positive drug test was due to legally prescribed pain medications and even offered to provide documents to the casino to support this, the casino still refused to hire her. So the crux of this case was that the casino's refusal to hire an applicant taking lawful prescription drugs due to a disability violated the Americans with Disabilities Act. So that's the first lawsuit that came to pass. And it was, you know, this is, I could see how this could play out very easily because, you know, candidly, you have somebody who's going to be applying for a job and they're taking prescription drugs long before they get to the job interview. And it's a legally prescribed prescription drug. And it's also a prescription drug that's going to show up on a drug test. And you could also understand from the employer's standpoint how they might be a little bit leery to hire somebody like this, depending upon the nature of the job, which we'll get into in a second as well. But before we do that, let me tell you a little bit about the second lawsuit, which happened 2 weeks later, again around September 2016. This time, the EEOC, Rick, filed a complaint against a regional medical center alleging it terminated a physician who was already on the job after learning about his use of narcotics to treat his chronic pain. According to the lawsuit, the physician provided the medical center with a letter from his own doctor, which stated that he was undergoing treatment for a chronic pain condition that limited the functioning of his movements. Excuse me. After receiving this letter, the medical center removed the physician from the scheduling pending further evaluation of his condition and then eventually notified the physician of his termination unless he resigned. They gave him the opportunity to resign first, and they stated it was because they believed that he could not meet the requirement of his job duties due to pain medications and spinal injections that he was taking. Now, imagine this. You could see a legitimate concern by a medical institution, right, that they have a physician on staff who's taking pain medication that might in some way inhibit his ability to think clearly, right? And sure. And where would thinking clearly be more important than in a medical scenario?
Well, if you're a surgeon, you're doing invasive things, you know.
Well, even if you're just certainly a doctor examining somebody, if you're going to then prescribe something to them, you better be aware of, you know, what the condition is and how serious it is and so forth. But in any event, in this situation, the EEOC filed a complaint alleging the physician could have performed his job safely and competently, and therefore the decision of the medical facility was violating the ADA. Why? Because there was no interactive dialogue to determine the nature of the drug use, whether it was prescription drug use, whether he could still perform his job despite taking it. Now, remember, you have to engage in this interactive process. And we, again, had a whole show on the ADA on that. And you have to find out facts. You can't just go willy-nilly and say, okay, you're gone. If somebody has a valid prescription and is taking medication, you then go to step two, which is to evaluate whether they can perform their job reasonably with a reasonable accommodation. Okay, so you have to decide if you can accommodate them. But the EEOC's press release in this case was very interesting. It stated, and I'm going to quote, employers have an obligation to conduct individualized assessments when they have a concern about an employee's ability to safely perform his or her job duties, unquote. So what's my take on all of this? Well, employers can lawfully test employees for prescription drug abuse and can regulate the abuse of such drugs in the workplace, including pre-employment applications, somebody who's applying for a job. The ADA specifically states that test results for illegal drug use are not medical examinations and are not evidence of discrimination against recovering drug users when used to ensure that the individual has not resumed illegal drug use. So if an employee then uses a prescription drug that is not prescribed to him or her, this is considered illegal drug use and the employer can impose discipline for violating its policy against illegal drug abuse. However, that being said, these cases also serve as a reminder that employers should avoid making adverse decisions based on misperceptions or a lack of information about the effect of a prescription drug on an employee's ability to actually perform their drug duties. They have to figure that out. They should take precautions before implementing a blanket drug testing policy that does not account for the need under the ADA to engage in the interactive process when it comes to prescription drug use. You've got to be able to determine if this was prescription drug use, and then and only then do you get to the step of deciding whether or not with that drug use you can provide a reasonable accommodation.
So that's where this employer failed in your second lawsuit example. They didn't pursue the facts after the doctor served up the letter that he was taking prescription drugs.
Well, and in fact, a doctor's letter wouldn't even have been actually required. He went to the ends of the earth, you might say, to establish the prescription drug use. His statement that he was taking prescription drug use could have been verified by his own physician. Yes. And I don't think that was unreasonable for an employer to ask that, but it never got to that point because the employer didn't believe him in the first place. As soon as he said, I am taking prescription drug, that the light should have came on right then. And they should have started the interactive process, which may have led down the road to asking for a letter. And then, of course, he could have gotten a letter. Actually, all he had to do was he could have just showed him the prescription bottle with his name on it, right?
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful of this, because these cases demonstrate the importance of ensuring that certain policies and practices in an employment setting, including requirements that employees report their prescription drug use, be limited to those working in safety-sensitive positions. Okay? In other words, if you're in a job where there is no drug testing policy and you're not in a dangerous job where an employer can say, hey, we want you to be drug tested because of the nature of the job itself, then there may be no obligation whatsoever to even divulge your prescription drug use. But if you're on a prescription drug, it certainly behooves you, if you've got to take it during your employment, to have that bottle with you, have it there in case any questions ever arise. So how do we lead into this accommodation scenario now? I want to alert employers that there is a danger. Let's assume now you've interacted. Let's assume you have done your job. Forget these other cases we just mentioned. You have done your job. You've gone into the interactive process. Now you're going to determine whether you can make a reasonable accommodation. In other words, change the job duties of this job so you can still get the job performance out of the employee, but he or she won't have to do the, in this case, let's say, heavy lifting that they would have to normally do in that job. Remember that long-term shifts of essential job functions may remove them as mandatory qualifications. What do I mean by that? The ADA only requires employers to provide reasonable accommodations that allow the disabled employee or applicant to perform the essential functions of the job. The essential functions of the job. The employer is not required to shift or remove essential job functions. Okay? In other words, if that job cannot be done, if you want to accommodate an employee and that job cannot be done because you have to remove essential functions of that job in order to get it done, you're not required to give an accommodation. That's something separate and apart from engaging in the interactive process with the employee that we talked about at the top of the show. It's a two-step process. Once and only if you get by that interactive process, then you determine whether an accommodation can be reasonable. How can it be reasonable? By not taking away the essential functions of that job. Okay? So if you relieve an employee of the need to perform essential functions of his job in order to accommodate him, you may be prohibited later on from reinstituting that essential function. And therefore, the employee is going to say, wait a minute, this job has changed. You've taken away the essential functions and you've let me do it as is. So now you can't get rid of me because this job is my job. This is my new job classification. Okay?
They can't make that change temporarily?
They can make it temporarily, but it's a danger because whatever temporary is going to be judged on an ad hoc basis. That means on a case-by-case basis, right? There's no set length of time. It depends on the job function. You know, the when was the job description written on this job? Let me give you an example. There's a case called Camp CAMP versus Bilow BI-LO LLC. The plaintiff here worked as a grocery clerk for 38 years. Due to childhood scoliosis, he could not lift more than 35 pounds. Over the years of his employment, he was relieved of such lifting, which was shifted to other employees. When a new manager assumed supervision of the plaintiff, he discovered this limitation and referred him to corporate human resources for an evaluation of his ability to perform the essential functions of that job. HR concluded that the employee plaintiff could not perform the essential functions of the job due to the lifting restriction and based its conclusion, human resources did that is, based its conclusion on a job description prepared 30 years after he began working for the company. On appeal, the federal court decided that the ADA claim was good, remanding the lawsuit to trial on the question of whether lifting heavier weights is really an essential function of the job, which it used to be, right? The court concluded that because the plaintiff had been relieved of such lifting duties for so many years, this created a factual question as to whether the lifting requirement was truly an essential function of the job. So I'd tell employers to stick to the standard test. If you can provide an accommodation without removing the essential functions of the job, do it. But never remove the essential functions of the job, even for a short period of time. I wouldn't recommend that. Now, what are essential functions of the job? That depends on the job. What do you need to do at a minimum to get that job done pursuant to the job description of that job? Okay, so employers, again, who frequently shift essential job functions with the intent of allowing employees to transition back to work from injury or illness is dangerous. A long-term removal of such essential functions may eliminate the employer's ability to later use the employee's inability to perform the job as grounds for ending their employment. It should be temporary in nature. So, again, if you now change these essential functions of the job over a long span of time, and now you want to fire the employee because you want to put back the essential functions of the job, that employee might be able to institute litigation against you because they're going to claim, hey, that's no longer the essential function of the job. You took it away a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So I hope these points are taken to heart by employers.
So if an employer makes a change like this and without taking away the essentials of the job, but changes it to accommodate the employee, what is a reasonable amount of time for an employee should the employer come back and say, hey, I want you to go back to what the job description originally was? What's that reasonable amount of time where, no, you change it to accommodate what I'm doing here because of my health condition, and now you want to change it?
Well, what you do is you typically make a reasonable accommodation request. That's a contractual a deal, and that's signed by the employer and the employee, and that determines the length of time by which that reasonable accommodation is going to be provided. Subsequent to that time, the employee is reevaluated by the doctor. And depending upon the nature of the job and the amount of employees an employer has, that's going to determine down the line how long this process is going to be reinstituted. In other words, an employer doesn't have to do this forever because it depends on the length of tenure of the employee. In other words, you just can't go around willy-nilly firing employees because they have a disability. That's what the ADA is for. So what you're going to have to do is make an accommodation that allows them to function and perform the essential functions of the job for the period of time that you feel necessary. If you terminate that employee, I would urge employers to make sure it's not based on some disability, because as long as they can perform the essential functions of the job with an accommodation, in my particular view, I would keep them employed, because the essential functions of the job are being performed. And if you go around terminating employees who are on that type of an accommodation basis, you're risking an ADA lawsuit, which can be filed, by the way, in both federal and state court. So how long it goes on, Rick, I would make sure that however long it goes on, you don't terminate that employee as a consequence of, because of the fact that it's continuing to go on for a long period of time. Because after all, the essential functions of the job are being performed, and eventually that employee is more than likely going to get well. It's rare that you have somebody who has an accommodation that's required that lasts for an infinite period of time. At some point in time, somebody's going to come back and end that accommodation. Because remember, that's what it is. It's an accommodation. It's not a permanent job description change. So you have to be very careful with that. And depending on the specific circumstances, I would consult with an attorney before giving a definitive answer on how long that accommodation is going to go.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
So, well, I know this has been a lot to take in, but this is the headliner issue in my last December 2016 newsletter. So you can go and you can review this in the Bottle Business Sense newsletter. If you can go to bottlebusinesssense.com and you can sign up for free for the newsletter, and you'll get it and you'll have access to all of the issues. Or you can simply listen to this tape at your leisure and you know, make sure that you understand the principles behind this, because this is important. Not only because employers need to be aware of this situation in accommodating people, but also because we have this prescription drug use that is running rampant around the country, and you have to walk the fine line of making sure it's a valid prescription drug use versus a non-prescription drug abuse, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, great advice for all of our employers out there. This is very important information. If you have legal counsel and you have found yourself in a situation like this, then, you know, obviously before you take any action, consult with them. If you don't have legal counsel and you are wondering how to proceed, then reach out to Bill, because he's a great resource. He's well experienced in this, and is willing to take and at least guide you in the right direction and some of your options. So, Bill, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, both area code 949, the numbers are 413-653-5, 698-6222, and, of course, Bill at WFBLegalConsulting.com, and the website WFBLegalConsulting.com. So any of those means, of course, we, as you said, I think, at the top of the show, Facebook, LinkedIn. There's even a WFBLC LinkedIn site and a Facebook site individually. There's Bottle Business Sense sites. All of those sites are interconnected. YouTube, they're all interconnected. All you got to do is Google us, and you can Google my name. You can Google Rick's name. You can Google Bottle Business Sense generally, or Bottle Business Sense Show, and you'll come up with a whole slew of ways to get a hold of us.
All right. All right, folks. Well, thanks for joining us today here on the Bottle Business Sense Show. I hope you found this information useful. We have a ton of knowledge base on the Bottle Business Sense Show website. And so if it's not this topic, or and it's possibly another topic that may be affecting you as an employer or you as an employee, or maybe just looking for marketing tips, go to our website. There's a whole resource of categories that you can search, and of previous episodes that we've shared information on. Take a look at it. There's a great resource. So with that being said, thanks again, Bill, for opening the new year here with this great episode. And
We look forward to seeing everybody again next week, but in 2 weeks. We're going bi-weekly. But because of our busy schedules. But I wanted to add real quick, go to Rick's and my website. You can see reviews from clients. Go to, in my instance, you can also go to AVVO, that's AVVO.com. And that's a legal website. It's got other lawyers' reviews of myself. It's got client reviews. Go and check these things out, no matter who you deal with, because you want to make sure you're getting some feedback from people who have actually retained the people that you're interested in. So anyway, having said that, I know it's been a little bit longer of a show today. I hope everybody has a great week and a great start to the new year, and we'll see you all on the next show.
All right. We'll see you next week.